Does trauma build character? I saw a post on Instagram that said, trauma doesn't build character. It actually makes it harder to develop character and figure out who we are. I honestly never thought about it that way. I feel like on some level the post makes sense. I wouldn't disagree with it or dismiss it. In fact, I 100% agree with it. But it does depend on the person and the type of trauma they've experienced. Welcome back to the Mull and Wine Podcast. I'm your host, Dawn Melissa. Today we're talking about character building and its impact on friendships. That sounds deep, don't it? You know, there's levels, there's layers to me. You gotta peel the onion. I'm not just all sarcasm and shit talking. Sometimes, well, most times, I like to get deep with it. I like to talk about real things. Most people don't know that. That's fine. But yeah, character building and its impact on friendships. So tuck in. Today I'm drinking a rosé, a nice bubbly rosé. Summer afternoons, I just prefer a nice bubbly wine, you know, whether it's a white wine or rosé. Typically, I prefer a white sparkling wine, but lately I've been into the rosé. I don't know why. Anyway, that's what I'm drinking. Please grab your drink of choice and join me in this very important discussion. Character building is the development and strengthening of positive traits that define a person's behavior and decisions. Character building involves cultivating qualities such as integrity, honesty, empathy, resilience, and accountability. Typically, when I think of character building, I think of integrity and accountability. I never think about honesty and empathy and resilience, which is crazy because I'm always talking about how empathetic I am. And when it comes to trauma and surviving trauma, it takes a lot of resilience too, right? And honesty is important. You know, not a lot of people are honest. It's hard to be honest all the time, but it's always been most important to me that people have integrity and they take accountability for things. Anyone who's ever heard me talk about life in Italy knows that I get extremely frustrated when it comes to Italians never taking accountability for anything. But my biggest thing is when they, you know, deny being racist. You know, they defend perfect strangers or deny their own biased behavior and gaslight the fuck out of you. And that shit nearly drove me insane. Like, it nearly drove me to madness. So accountability is always first on my list when it comes to character building. From now on, I will think about all five of these qualities: integrity, honesty, empathy, resilience, and accountability. Whenever I think about a person's lack of character, I worry that they might be more susceptible to manipulative behavior. I base that on my own experiences, I guess. I did fall prey to manipulation. I don't know how I survived this long, but I think about some of the situations I've been in, and some of them were dangerous, you know? Some of them were, you know, innocuous. They weren't that serious. They were just like, why were you there? Like, why did that happen to you? But a lot of them were pretty dangerous because my ass was so easily manipulated. So a part of me, yeah, it agrees with that Instagram post. Trauma does make it more difficult to build character and like arm yourself, strengthen yourself against manipulation and toxic friendships. But I am understanding now that there is more to it. So the key components of character building: integrity, having strong moral principles, being honest, and doing the right thing even when no one's watching. Empathy, understanding and sharing the feelings of others. Empathy helps in forming deep and meaningful connections. I feel like empathy has always been a part of my character building journey. People always called it sensitive. They always said, oh, Dawn, you're so sensitive. You're so sensitive. It wasn't sensitivity, it was empathy. Or maybe they're one and the same, I guess. But either way, I've always been an empathetic person. So that's one check for me. The next one, resilience, the ability to recover from setbacks and keep going in the face of adversity. Resilience builds mental toughness. Interesting. See, because I've always felt like I was a resilient person. I'm still here, right? But I guess it got harder. After the trauma of losing two babies, I understood that resilience wasn't something you just get to keep automatically. You have to fight for it. And it took me a long time to get my resilience back. And then there's accountability, taking responsibility for your actions and their consequences. Accountability ensures reliability and trustworthiness. Like I said, accountability is a very strong sticking point for me. But even though I judge other people, like I get real angry at other people who don't take accountability, it is something we all have to consciously work at. Because nobody wants to be like, yeah, I'm wrong. Nobody wants to be wrong. Yeah. So even me, I have to check myself sometimes. I have to like remember, Dawn, you did that. You were wrong for that. You gossiped. You talked shit about somebody. I have to push myself to take accountability and just recognize that I'm not perfect. But if I want to be seen as reliable and trustworthy, I gotta be accountable. I gotta hold myself accountable. And I want to be reliable and trustworthy. Okay, last thing, self-discipline, the ability to control one's emotions. Oh no, that is my weakness. Oh Lord. The ability to control one's emotions, behaviors, and desires in the face of external demands. Okay, yeah, if I'm being honest, I struggle with self-discipline. And this is me taking accountability for it. Okay, I've got four. I've got four out of the five key components of character building. Almost there, okay? Just gotta work on that self-discipline, I guess. So how does failing to build character affect friendships? And this is starting to sound a little TED Talky, I suppose. That's not my intention. Like, I'm not trying to do like a lecture here. This is supposed to be about storytelling and shit talking. Don't worry, I'm getting to that. And speaking of, I'm gonna put a disclaimer here. This podcast is for entertainment purposes. Any similarities to real life events is purely coincidental. If you see yourself in these stories, in any of my stories, it's probably your imagination or it might be fact. It might be true. Okay, so how does failing to build character affect friendships? Well, when you don't have character, it impacts the quality and the type of friendships you attract and maintain. I, for one, have had a shit ton of shitty friendships. I know I sound self-pitying, but what can I do? What can I say? It's fact. It's my history. It's my experiences. Try to have some empathy, why don't you? In these toxic and dysfunctional friendships, you will have a lack of trust. Without integrity and accountability, you'll find it hard to trust people. And it's hard to rely on other people who are inconsistent and untrustworthy. So people might have felt like they couldn't rely on me. I felt like people were inconsistent and untrustworthy. Like that, you know, I guess it goes both ways. Superficial relationships. Empathy and genuine care are crucial for deep, meaning friendships. So if you don't have these traits, then your connections lack depth and authenticity. You'll find yourself only talking about things like The Real Housewives or, you know, famous TikTokers and other shit like that. And that makes sense because I definitely had a lot of superficial connections, superficial friendships. I talked about having drinking buddies in London, and that was basically it. I remember one time I was one-on-one with a girl and there was something going on in her family, and you know, a lot of times she would just kind of talk about her family and whatever was going on with her, but it was real just like, it was weird the way she would talk about it. Like, it wasn't a big deal, but it was shit that really was a big deal. And one time it was just her and I, it was just us. I think maybe we were waiting for the rest of the group to come, or maybe we were just hanging out, just the two of us. But I just looked at her and I was like, well, how are you handling this? And I remember the shock in her face. She was so taken aback, and it took her a moment to sort of process the question. And then finally, she sort of relaxed and we talked about it. It was the most weirdest, like unexpected, real moment between us. We never had another one after that. And I remember thinking, maybe this connection has the potential to be something real. Maybe this could be a real friendship. It was a fleeting thought. It was definitely a fleeting thought because some months later, I remember we were all talking about keeping in touch after we finished school. And I said, we'll keep in touch, right? And she was like, I hope to keep in touch with you, Dawn. I hope to. We don't keep in touch. It's been like 5 years. No, wait, we're going on 7 years. We're going on 7 years since the last time we talked. So yeah, that didn't work out. But I did appreciate that moment. It was really cool to actually have a real conversation with someone. Poor conflict resolution. Without resilience and self-discipline, you're going to have some trouble managing conflicts healthily. Ooh, I get that. I understand that. Minor disagreements can escalate very quickly. which has happened to me. And this is one of the main reasons why I avoid confrontation, because I don't know how I'm going to react. I don't know what I'm going to do when it comes down to dealing with the conflict. I definitely worry about my behavior, not just because I'm a Black woman and I know that no matter what I do, it's going to be perceived as angry and aggressive and bitter or whatever, but also because I know deep down I don't handle conflict very well. There I go being honest again. I got that integrity down lock, y'all. So yeah, because I don't handle conflict very well, and also being a Black woman, it's difficult to get people to be on my side and empathize with me, I do avoid confrontation. And so a lot of people have gotten away with a lot of shit over the years. And I'm gonna get into some of that a little later. But first, let's talk about inconsistent support. True friendships involve mutual support and understanding. So if someone lacks empathy and accountability, they're not going to be there for your friends in times of need, and that's going to make you feel abandoned, which I know all too well. I know about that all too fucking well. There's this quote I keep seeing on Instagram about how real friends aren't just there during the good times, they're also there during the times of need. And I'm like, yeah, thanks, Instagram. Thanks for the reminder. But we also have to be careful, because some of them people be around when things are bad just so they can witness your bad luck. Sometimes they be celebrating it, like quietly celebrating your failures, your losses. They are never there to celebrate your wins, but they show up right on time for your losses. That's different than people being there in your time of need. They are there to be entertained. They are not your real friends. Like, they just want to see you suffer. And that's so weird. This last one's gonna lead into my story time. It's had the biggest impact on my friendships throughout the years. It's called manipulative behavior. We've all heard of it. This isn't a new concept. Either you've been manipulated or you're the manipulator. Perhaps you learned how to be a manipulator after being manipulated. I don't know. It's entirely possible. Hurt people and all that other stuff. Obviously, not everyone picks up this quote-unquote skill. I certainly didn't. I'm not saying I wanted to learn how to be a manipulator, but the concept of it, like, it's like I'm not even creative enough to think of a way to manipulate someone. It's the lack of knowledge that kind of gets to me a little bit. And this is why I get so pissed off when I hear people say that people pleasers are manipulative, because I couldn't even fathom. I don't know where you get this idea from. I feel like if you say a people pleaser is manipulative, it must mean that you don't want to take accountability for something. It's got to mean you don't want to take accountability for something. One of the examples that I've heard of how people pleasers are manipulative is if a people pleaser gives you something or puts a lot into the friendship and then feeling some kind of way if you don't reciprocate. There are actual people out there who feel like if someone expects reciprocity in a friendship or a relationship, oh, they must be manipulative. That's crazy. If I'm in a friendship with you or a relationship with you, and I'm putting effort into the friendship or relationship, I expect reciprocity. I'm doing it so I get something back in return. Otherwise, why the hell are we here? You know, I'm leading by example. I'm showing you how I want to be treated. That's not manipulative. So that's why I get so pissed off. I'm like, oh, you're just lazy. Or, oh, you really just don't care about this person. If you're calling them manipulative for expecting you to reciprocate the behavior that they're giving to you. So yeah, I never heard of this idea, this concept that people pleasers are the bad guys, that people pleasers are really the masterminds of manipulation until recently. And I was appalled. I was shook. And there were actually people who agreed with it. I heard it on TikTok. There were actually people who agreed with this TikToker. I was so pissed off at him that I had to block him. I was like, fuck this guy. Cause who says that shit? And with his whole chest too. He exposed himself. He let the world know, yeah, there's some people out there that I really don't fuck with, but I'll accept any gifts they give me. I'll accept any attention they give me, any love they give me. He said that. I was like, I can't follow that kind of garbage. I don't need that kind of nonsense on my FYP. So yeah, manipulative behavior. Without strong moral principles, individuals might resort to manipulation to get what they want. This behavior damages relationship and erodes trust. So the people who lack character may resort to manipulation to get what they want. And then on the flip side, the people who lack character because they never got a chance to develop character, to get to know themselves, to find themselves, they're more likely to fall prey to manipulation. And that's why I say manipulative behavior has impacted my friendships and my relationships the most. Because I've been manipulated a lot. a lot. And I'm not proud of it, but I'm not going to be ashamed of it, you know, because I've learned from it. I've grown from it. I shouldn't be the one who is ashamed or embarrassed. And I'm sharing these stories so that other people can recognize the red flags or maybe be able to spot the manipulation. And that takes us into story time. They say people come into our lives for a reason, a season, or a lesson. Sometimes I feel like these people entered and exited my life for all three, if you can imagine. Those have been probably the most tumultuous, gut-wrenching, and mind-fucking experiences. They were the worst and best things to happen to me. No new friendship starts off toxic, or at least we don't think they're toxic in the beginning. In fact, in the beginning, everything glittered. Everything sparkled. In my case, some of those friendships were never meant to be, or they went left. They soured due to one wrong move, one bad decision, one inconsiderate or insensitive moment. But like I said, there were some amazing moments sprinkled in here and there, unforgettable moments, and they blinded me from the truth that I would eventually come to accept. I met her right after musical theater school. I was excited to transition from that toxic environment full of narcissistic, self-involved theater kids. And you know what I mean about theater kids. But yeah, I was ready to get into a real adult friendship. So I jumped feet first into this, and she was lovely. To this day, I hold no ill will toward her, you know? She was a little older, and I thought of her as a big sister. I wouldn't say we were best friends or even that close. I just really liked her. I really thought she was a genuinely nice, thoughtful person. And I still think that she had her moments and she was more consistent about that with her other friends. But when you like someone, when you start to really care about them, you want to pour into that friendship. That's how I am. Like I said, I jumped feet first into this friendship and I wanted to pour into it and nurture it. When you feel that way about someone, you do things like write short screenplays and you ask them to star in your short film because you think they'd be perfect. Even if in hindsight, they probably weren't, but it didn't matter at the time because you liked them. So one day my friend tells me that she was clearing out some stuff in her house. She was throwing them away or donating them. She asked if I wanted anything. I really didn't, but I didn't know how to say no. In my head, I felt like I would be hurting her feelings or being rude by saying no. So I sort of agreed to take one item. It was a cute item, you know. I ended up hanging it on my wall for years. But the next thing I knew, she'd somehow pawned off two more items. Again, I didn't really want to take any of them, but, you know, whatever. So then she says, okay, well, I'll throw in these two extra items and how about $25 for all three? Now, I know what you're thinking. $25 isn't a lot of money. Well, when you are a struggling actress living in LA, it kind of is. Money was tight, you know? I wasn't getting those parts that I was auditioning for. I wasn't even getting a lot of fucking auditions, to be honest. So $25, it felt like a lot. And it felt even more magnified in the situation, considering these were items she was gonna throw away. Why was she charging me for them? But she's like, $25 is a fair price, right? Fair price. Fair price. Excuse me, I had to walk away for a moment. I was getting hot behind the ears. Not that I'm still angry about any of this. You know, this happened at least 10 years ago, and I'd like to think that I've forgiven myself for it, even though I still cringe at the memory. Because yes, you may have guessed it, I did not say no. I paid her the $25 and took the 3 items that I did not want in the first place. And I never said anything about it. It was just like this thing that was there that I felt too uncomfortable to talk about. And I think that was the beginning to me realizing that this wasn't really a friendship, that this wasn't, I don't know, it was the beginning, you know? And there are other examples of this that we could get into, and we'll see about the time. But in that moment, I gave her the $25. It hurt. It hurt like hell to part with that money. But I gave it to her and I took those 3 items home. And my boyfriend at the time was like, "What's this?" And I was too embarrassed to even tell him what happened. I was just like, "Oh, so-and-so gave these to me. She was throwing them away." I didn't have boundaries. I wasn't assertive. I didn't know how to say no. That is due to my lack of character, the fact that I did not know myself. So what happened there? Well, I didn't recognize the manipulation. I mean, I did see how the generous offer had somehow become transactional, and it did make me feel some kind of way, but I didn't recognize it as manipulation. Then there was the pressure to agree. I had been asked a few times, "Are you sure you don't want this? Are you sure? Are you sure? Because this is that and that is this. So are you sure?" To this day, I get a little triggered when somebody asks, "Are you sure?" Sometimes my husband does that, but he does that typically when it's date night and we are going to go out to eat. And I say, "Oh, why don't we do this?" And he says, "Are you sure?" So it's not that big a deal. But when anyone asks, "Are you sure?" I'm triggered. And I think it stems from that moment. Feeling the pressure to agree, to acquiesce to somebody else's desires, wants, or needs. I did not know how to say no. The role of guilt and obligation. Well, what did I say earlier? When you like someone, you want to pour into that friendship. And because I had no boundaries, I didn't realize where that pouring into the friendship should have stopped. I did feel this obligation to make her happy. I won't blame her for that. She didn't know. I hope she didn't know that I lacked boundaries and didn't know how to say no or whatever. Although it was pretty obvious, so maybe she didn't know. But maybe she wasn't aware that she was taking advantage of that. Who knows? Who truly knows? I'd like to give her the benefit of the doubt, you know? I'd like to hold on to some of the good memories we had together instead of just bashing her in any way. So I'd like to think she didn't know. What could have turned the whole thing around would have been to set clear boundaries. I also could have reframed the favor. Not that it was really a favor. Technically it was. But I could have asked her, "Well, if I don't buy these items from you, are you still going to donate them or throw them away?" But honestly, that could have led to an uncomfortable discussion that I just wasn't ready for. So that would have been difficult. But I have learned from that experience, and that's a good thing. I still struggle with saying no, but I think it has become a little easier because I've never really liked or cared for. I don't want to say loved because I don't want people to think I mean romantically, but I haven't liked anyone as much as I'd liked her in a very long time. So saying no to people is a lot easier. The open discussion thing. Here's the thing about this woman. I feel like she would have been open to an open discussion if I had been more mature, if I had been more assertive, if I had been better at communicating. So there wouldn't have been a confrontation. I know this. She's not that type of person. She was always very even-keeled, if that makes sense. Like, she was in control of her emotion, and she'd said the right thing most of the time. I'd never seen her be verbally abusive to anyone else, and she was never outwardly disrespectful. So I feel like, had I been mature enough, had I had more assertiveness or been better at communicating, it would have been an open discussion. It wouldn't have been a problem. So I blame myself for that. But we're not going to pretend like she didn't manipulate me. We're not going to pretend that this memory, this cringe memory of mine, isn't valid. It's so weird. I'm not shit talking. Do y'all see that? When I tell you that I genuinely feel like this person was a good person who happened to hurt me, but I don't think it's in her practice to hurt people. Oh my God, I sound emotional. But so it's hard to shit talk about people that you know who are genuinely good people. They just weren't your person. I hate that I sound so emotional. And that's why I say, you know, you get into these friendships and there's those good times, there's those good moments sprinkled in here and there. And when you think about them, it's like, it's hard to trash the entire friendship. She had her person or her people and they were not me. And I know what you're thinking. You're like, Dawn, it was just a little moment. It was just a little moment. It's not that big a deal. Okay. But from my point of view, in my head, when I replay the clip of the entire friendship, it is a bigger deal, especially when you get into some of the tougher moments that were even harder to discuss. Like I mentioned, a short film. On every short film, there's tension on set. I was directing a short film. I'd written the screenplay. And like I said, I'd basically tailored the character around this person because I wanted her to star in it. And there's, of course, going to be tension on set, especially when I'm a newbie director. I have almost zero experience. I'd only directed a couple of TV pilots, indie TV pilots in New York, and I was into new media at the time. I was doing YouTube videos. So shooting an actual short film, directing it was brand new to me. So if there's tension on set with my cast who is more experienced than me, I'm not going to get the same respect as other directors would. And so I didn't get the same respect from my cast. And it was frustrating as hell. It hurt the most coming from her. And I thought, after all was said and done, and we came back and talked about it later, that she would recognize her part in it, I would recognize my part in it, and we could move on from there. I was shocked. I was shocked when she came at me with, "It's all your fault, Dawn." And that was a truly difficult discussion because, again, I didn't feel like I could defend myself. I didn't know how to defend myself. So I felt like I had to shoulder the blame for everything. So it did get more difficult. It did get more difficult. It felt like someone didn't have my back. So yeah, there are bigger things. You have that small, tiny pebble, which was the manipulation with the donation items. And then it grew into this rock that became, you know, the situation with the film. And then it became a mountain. When the last time we spoke was after I asked her to be my maid of honor. And she said yes. And then she honestly said no. Like, and I totally understood because there was a matter of a budget of getting over to Europe because I, you know, was getting married in London. And that was fine. Like, I was like, I appreciate your honesty. I'm really sad that you can't be there for my wedding, but I get it. Thanks for letting me know. But the hurtful thing was her completely disappearing. She took accountability for it, you know. She came back with, "I totally disappeared on you." But it was a year later. I didn't hear from her for a year. Not even, "How was the wedding?" Just, "Oh, hey, I disappeared. We should talk about it." She sent the message while I was on my honeymoon, though. So it was like, this isn't the time to talk about it. And because it wasn't on her time, it was, okay, we're done then. So you see what I mean? Like, you let little things go. You don't address them. You have taught someone. Anyway, moving on. I got some lighter moments. I got some other lighter moments in which I kind of got manipulated or kind of got tricked or fooled because of my lack of character, because of my lack of assertiveness or boundaries. You know what I'm saying? Like, but they're lighter moments. Like, they weren't as sad as this last situation was because these people weren't my friends. So they're a little funnier. So I'm in London at this point and I'm starting my web series, Come Wine With Me. Like I said, it's kind of like this, except it's a web series, and it's definitely just me complaining and drinking and getting drunk while I complain. Oh, it was so much fun. I think I started the web series right after I had this viral video, and it was a parody of Beyoncé's song, Sorry. It was called Worried, and it went viral. It was my first viral video. I think it went viral because Beyoncé's album, when it was first released, it was only available on, like, I forget what that platform was. But it was only available there. And so everybody was desperate to listen to this song. And I think that's how I reeled them in. It was funny. But right after this viral video, I was like, ooh, let me try to capitalize on that. So I started the web series and I got some really good feedback from people. And so I thought, maybe I should bring on some guests. And I had met some up-and-coming British actors at this point. And we were in touch, following each other on Instagram and Twitter and all that kind of stuff. And they were so cool. Again, we're talking about Black people. So if you heard my first episode, you'll know that I experienced a lot of rejection from Black British people. This is kind of part of it. In LA, I knew you're gonna have to do things on your own. It's every man for himself, every man or woman for themselves. And I got that. But with that mentality, I still ended up working and collaborating with other up-and-coming actors. It was easier to form a crew. It was easier to get a cast together. Everything was so fucking easy, especially with Black people. You know, I could be wrong. Things may have changed in the 7 years that I haven't been living in London. But, you know, I just think about some of these shows that come out, especially the new Netflix series, Supercell. And nothing against anybody, not for nothing, you know what I'm saying? But I do wonder, I would love to have been a fly on the wall on set or in pre-production, you know what I'm saying? Like, I love to see how all that worked out with their crew and their actors and stuff, like, just out of curiosity. And again, I'm not knocking anyone. I'm just, this is my way of saying maybe things have changed since I left London. But anyway, I had met some kind of up and coming actors and we were cool. We engage, interact with each other on social media. And when I decided to do the web series, I was like, I want to do guests. I want to have guests. I mean, if I'm thinking about it, if I'm being honest, me with guests is always a little bit weird. I have guests coming up on this podcast, and I already know the energy is going to be different. I'm not the best host when it comes to having guests. I'll admit that. I even had one of my upcoming guests kind of tell me I talk too much. I was like, really? You're going to say that to me? I cut that part out of the interview, by the way. So you won't hear that when that episode comes up. But I digress. So I had some guests on the web series and it was cool. Make no mistake, nothing was perfect. It was not like professional level or whatever. But at the time, I was so confident. I was so confident. Confident enough to be like, hey, so-and-so, would you be a guest on my web series? And the person was like, hey, Dawn, let's talk about it. And he had a play coming up and he said, come to my play and we can talk about it afterwards. And I'm like, oh, hey, okay, cool. I'll see you there. Bought my little fucking ticket, paid money to support his play. You know what I'm saying? And let me tell you something. This was not the British equivalent to like a Broadway play or even an off-Broadway play or even an off-Broadway play. This is a play that took place in like what looked like a classroom. And I'm not knocking it. I'm just saying, this is an up-and-coming actor, and this was a very small, very, very, very independent play. So my ticket wasn't that expensive. I think it was about £15, which still hurt my pockets, by the way. Like, living in London is expensive living in London. Every little pound counted. So yeah, hurt my pockets a little bit, even though it was only £15. But I went to it trusting that I would get something out of it, meaning 5 minutes of his time. It didn't even occur to me that he could have been like, email me the details and, you know, we'll talk about it via email. It didn't even occur to me. I was just like, oh, okay, cool. I'll see you there. I go to the play. I see it. It's all right. You know, I think all of the actors were really good. We're like arm's length away from these actors. That's how small the venue was. Okay. So again, I'm not trying to punch above my weight. It wasn't like I was trying to link up with Idris Elba or anything like that. You know what I'm saying? I wasn't punching above my weight. I stay for the play. I'm like, you know, clap, clap, clap. Great job. And then I'm kind of waiting around to see where this actor is so we can talk. He saw me, by the way. Of course he saw me in the audience. It wasn't a huge audience, so he knew I was there. And I'm waiting around, but he has disappeared. And I'm, you know, like, okay, maybe he forgot. I don't know. Maybe I just need to give him a few minutes to decompress in the dressing room. So I start to kind of wander around. It's a very small building. So I wander around a little bit and I end up near the exit and I'm thinking, maybe I'm going to go. And there's some stairs to the left. And as I'm about to exit, something said, look to the left. I look to the left and I see him starting to come down these stairs. And he freezes when he sees me. Like a deer in fucking headlights. He freezes. And I was like, oh, hey, how are you? And he's like, hey, I'm good, you know. And I'm like, did you want to get coffee and chat for a minute? And he's starting to back up the stairs. And he's like, oh, I can't right now. I can't. Like, let's talk soon. And he runs up the stairs and kind of disappears. And I'm standing there stuck on fucking stupid. You know, I'm standing there stuck on stupid. Just stuck on stupid. And that's when it hits me. I realize, okay, I've been played. I think it was like, come support my play and then go fuck yourself. And I realized that in that moment. And I felt so stupid. And so I left and I never told anyone about it. There's another guy who did a similar thing, another British guy who did a similar thing. And he's like, come to my comedy show. We'll talk about it afterwards. And I paid £30 this time. I know at this point you're like, what the fuck is wrong with you? Are you actually stupid? No, I'm not stupid. Like I said, gullible. I was gullible. I was naive. I wanted to have hope. I wanted to keep believing in the good in people. So I paid my little £30. I went to see his show the one time. And then he's like, oh, okay, I don't know what happened. I didn't see him. But he's still on text with me like, oh, I'm so busy. I'm sorry. He makes some joke. He's like, I'm busy doing this, that, and the other, and blah, blah, blah. And he's like, in other words, if you want my attention, send nudes. And I'm like, you're disgusting. You're fucking disgusting. But I happen to follow his mom on Instagram. She's like a veteran comedian. Like, I think she's an author as well. Like, you know, she's a good woman. And somehow I ended up winning tickets to her show. And I took a friend. And he's like, I'll talk to you afterwards. Because I think he was opening the show for his mom or whatever. I see him afterwards. And he's out there. I think he is signing autographs. No. He wasn't signing autographs. Of course not. He was passing out flyers for his next show. And I remember thinking, oh, and it clicked. It clicked then. And I was like, okay, first of all, why is there what looks like tomato sauce on your shirt? So it clicked again. I was like, okay, I've been bamboozled once again. And I kind of just let it go after that. I have no proof of this. There's no way I can prove this. But I have a sneaking suspicion that he low-key talked shit about me on... It wasn't a podcast. I think it was like a radio show that he did. He said something to the effect of, why would I come into this person's platform when my platform's bigger? Like, what can she offer me? And I'm like, is he talking about me? Because I used to listen to his radio show or whatever. And I was just like, is he talking about me or am I just reading too much into it? I can't prove it. You know, no one's going to confirm or deny it for me. But I always felt like that happened there, especially after the whole nudes comment. Like, I felt like, oh, this dude... I don't know what's up with him, but it's gotten weird. It's weird. So those were my experiences where I just was bamboozled because I didn't know how to assert myself or set those damn boundaries. But yeah, that's the thing. That's what happens. The takeaway is, if you're going to navigate friendships or even acquaintanceships or relationships, you have to build character. You have to know yourself, because character building has a massive impact on your friendships and your relationships and your acquaintanceships. Even your professional relationships, like your work colleagues and stuff, you have to build character, know who you are, be assertive, set boundaries. If you don't do those things, you will continue to get fucked over. Taken advantage of. Treat it like you're nothing. Don't do that. Good luck to all of you on your character building. If you've done that, if you know yourself, congratulations. Continue on your personal growth journey. There's always room for improvement. As we continue to live and breathe and exist in this world, we should also continue to grow and develop as human beings. Learn how to treat people, even the ones that we kind of like or the ones that we simply know, with basic respect. Show some empathy. That's what I wish for all of you, and that's what I definitely want for myself. And that's it. That's all I got for you guys today. Follow the Mull and Wine podcast. You can also find us on YouTube, and you can follow us on Instagram. I'm saying us. It's just me. Anyway, follow the Mull and Wine podcast. Find it on YouTube, and you can follow the Mull and Wine podcast on Instagram. Very soon, the podcast will be available on other streaming platforms. But for now, we just got Spotify and YouTube. So bear with me. And remember, integrity, empathy, resilience, accountability, and self-discipline. Key components of character building. The more you know.